This is the Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski. On 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Some news for high school basketball fans. They're going to hold the TSSAA tournaments at Rutherford County High School gyms this upcoming March and late February, because Lipscomb University and MTSU officials could not guarantee that their gyms would be available to hold the state championships and to allow fans. So because of that, the deadline for them to let the TSSAA know was last week. They've waited an extra week, I believe, trying to figure something out. And at this time, MTSU cannot guarantee that. So we're going to see the state tournament in Rutherford County at Rockville, Siegel, and Stewart's Creek. And they may have another gym that comes available as well, but that's going to take place for Division II, March 5th and 6th. The Division I girls tournament is March 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th. And then the boys state tournament is the 17th through the 20th. Again, there's more news all over Twitter about this, but through the Daily News Journal, I'm reading their report that Rutherford County is going to host the TSSAA tournament. It's just not going to be at MTSU this year. 615-737-1045, our number. Coming up at 12:15, Torrey Holt, Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist, on the show with us. Right now, though, we go to the
phones.
Looking
forward to that.
Yeah, it's
going to
be great. Jack is first up this hour. Jack, welcome.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about the Preds again, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, man. So you're clearly in on the season by calling in and wanting to discuss this.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Okay. I have another alias. I'm the OptiPred.
The OptiPred?
A lot of negativity, a lot of Negatitans fans, a lot of Negavols. I'm here to shine some.
Okay. Oh, I see. Give us the optimism. Hey, we've been discussing eyeballs, so I thought this was like the optical illusion. we were discussing Adam Gase earlier. Go ahead, Jack.
I'm kind of with y'all. I don't know if Saros is a proven goaltender yet. I don't know where we're going to get all this offense from. But we just signed Luke Cunningham. This will be his third full year playing in the NHL. He's 23. He was about a 0.5 point per game player last year. You got to expect that he's going to take a step forward. This will be Fabro's second year in the NHL. He wasn't drawing much attention last year. I think he's going to take a big step forward. I think Duchesne's going to come with a chip on his shoulder. Reed, I didn't even know he had a broken jaw last year in the playoffs or whenever that was. I wasn't even aware of that. You think he's playing on a chip with his shoulder, he's going to come out firing. If he just plays average, I think that the Jofa line and that second line with Mikhail Granlin and Cunningham, I think they can shock some people. And, yeah, Saros wasn't playing great, but adding Borovetsky and Benning, I mean, this guy's a light years ahead of Yannick Weber and Matt Irwin or whoever else we were throwing on that third line.
Yeah, Weber didn't even make the practice squad, did he? The taxi squad?
No, yeah. We had to sign him to some weird contract. Yeah, I'm not even sure. But, I mean, I think, yes, it's going to be hard to score, but the whole theme of the offseason was get back to the Predator way. And all we were saying last year is that on paper, this is the most talented Pred team that we've ever assembled, and now we're getting back to the Predator way, getting some big bodies, knocking some heads around. It's going to be some low scoring games, but I think we've got a shot to make the playoffs.
Well, that's the path, is to, you know, be the gritty team. He's talking about the Predator way. I'm thinking about the Trotz way when he says that. And look, that's what helped build the franchise to what it is. But I think that the style will require them to play tough, physical, and just be the, you know, the Dallas Stars are like this. It's just a pain in the butt to play.
Here's another thing we didn't touch on. They're going to see the same teams over and over and over.
Yes.
So this is big on John Hines. There's a little bit of playoff thing here where you're seeing the same teams over and over, and you have to figure them out over time. Mm-hmm. You have to adjust to them over time, adjust to their adjustments, all of that kind of back and forth thing where you're seeing them a lot more often. And So it's a challenge. We're going to learn a lot about him as a coach in terms of his ability to change things for the same opponent.
Let's go, Corey, final call this segment. Hey, Corey.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great.
Hey, well, what's up?
Corey, the communicator.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Living up to all expectations here.
The last caller, man. That was a good call. He had a lot of information.
Corey, how have you been? How have things been?
How were the holidays?
Yeah.
The holidays were fruitful.
Good. Good.
I'm just glad to have a job and whatnot. A house and a vehicle to get to that job.
Those are all the important things.
You're a very old soul by saying that, Corey, and yes. We appreciate that.
Yeah. My dad's like 71, and he's a Vietnam vet, so I had to be pretty humble and
yes.
thankful for what I have.
But absolutely.
Anyway, can I complain about something that I've been wanting to complain about for 2 weeks now?
Absolutely.
What do you use to clean your nose? Is it Navage? Do you use that Navage thing? Oh, my God. I can't stand the way the guy says Navage. I just want to quit everything.
I'm not a neti pot guy myself. I'm a tissue guy.
You should use Navage, okay?
Navage.
Yes. That guy drives me crazy.
Corey does, yes.
Yeah, he uses it. He just doesn't like the communicator.
I can't believe it.
So do you have sinus issues?
No, I just have Navage issues.
Look at you're communicating fantastically well.
Yeah, I've missed a few weeks and I've needed practice, but I'm doing all right today.
You're doing great.
Sounds pretty good. What else is going on?
Corey,
what do you got going on tonight?
Tonight? Well, I would have watched the Predators game, but then I just found out I can't watch it.
Yeah, you're streaming.
What do you use? Sling? Hulu?
I have Hulu and YouTube TV. I think we got Hulu as a gift from somebody,
mm-hmm.
and I pay for YouTube.
Some gift.
Yeah, no Preds on Hulu.
Yeah, that's pretty discouraging.
Hey, we've got Tori Holt about to call in, so
I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, thank you, Corey. Corey, the communicator.
Good to hear from you, brother.
Always communicating.
Communicated well today.
Counting his blessings.
And thank your father for his service.
Yes, and he hates the Navage. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue, rolls on. Pleased to be joined by Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist, big game, Tori Holt joins us on Zoom. Tori, it's great to have you on, man. Congratulations, first and foremost, on the honor.
Thank you, man. It's a pleasure to be on, and Happy New Year, and such a great honor and to be a finalist for the second year in a row. So looking forward to how this shakes out, and certainly have enjoyed the journey, man.
What's it like, a receiver, such a unique position? First off, because there's a lot of personality at the position.
Yeah.
Secondly, because we're in the prime right now of the guys who, who've just gone in, you see T.O. and Randy, and now you're being considered along with Calvin Johnson, Reggie Wayne, sorry. So a lot of prestigious people. What's it like to be amongst that bunch? You played with them, so you knew they would come, but here it is.
No, it's great, man. You know, and I'm older than those guys. So, you know, I'm right in the era, right, you know, with Randy and those guys. So I'm kind of like, for me, I'm kind of like the, if I get voted, you know, inducted in at some point, I'm like the last of that era. And then it's Calvin and then, you know, Reggie and, you know, Fitzgerald and Anquan and that era of players. So, but it's really cool because those guys, Reggie was very dominant and really good, played on some great teams, individual numbers, outstanding. Same thing as Calvin Johnson, the same thing for me as well. So we all were really good in our era of play. I think when you look, as you break it down, and I think about myself, again, just the level of production in the era in which I played, and you mentioned the names, Marvin Harrison, Isaac Bruce, Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, list goes on and on, and being able to play in that era and still be highly productive, I think is what I'm most proud of, Paul. And glad that I had an opportunity to do that in the National Football League, a game that I love and admire from afar. And then I felt good about, you know, trying to carry the torch that Jerry and Lofton and Art Monk and those guys carried and passed on to receivers. So I think that's what I kind of hope, tip my hat to and hold and really is most proud of when I think about my career.
Torrey, one of the things that jumps out to me, aside from just your big play ability, is your longevity and your endurance in these games. You played in all but three regular season games throughout your career. I think I have that right.
Yeah.
158 starts and 173 of the 176 possible regular season games you played in.
Yeah.
And you mentioned some of the guys at your position there, but I recall you comparing, you know, the game in, game out mentality to some of the NBA stars that I certainly grew up watching.
Yep.
With Jordan and Magic Johnson and Karl Malone, those guys night in and night out were the best at what they did, and they brought it every single time. And you wanted to live up to those expectations from the NBA perspective every time you put the pads on.
Absolutely. It was something that was that I took pride in. It was important for me to be available all the time, and not only to be available, but be productive, be responsible, be accounted for. In any game plan. And I can say, I look over my career, I was able to do that for a decade. And, you know, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, those guys were the example. Dominique Wilkins, those guys were the example. They showed up every single night and played at a very high level. So I admired that, and I said, you know what? I want to add that part of their game to my game. How can I do that? So I immediately got to work. I worked on my stamina. Another guy who had incredible stamina, too, and I mentioned it earlier this week, too, is Jerry Rice had phenomenal stamina. You know, he could go and go and go and go and go. And that was, again, something that I took from Jerry's game and added to my game. The only way you can reach for greatness is you have to have the stamina, the mindset, obviously have some luck of health too. But I think the stamina, the mindset, making it a priority to be good in that area, I think, again, was certainly something that was important to me. And hopefully folks saw that when they watched me play.
You'll forever be known as a Ram, obviously. At the end, like a lot of guys, you dipped your toe in the water elsewhere. I was covering the AFC South at the time when you were with the Jags, met you a little bit there. Then you gave it a shot with the Patriots. I think you didn't make it to games there. What did you get out of those 2 years, and how important was it maybe for you to go and find the ending?
Yeah. No, it was cool. You know, when I got to Jacksonville, and, you know, I was, you know, put in a situation where I was around a lot of young guys, Mike Thomas, and those guys were young wide receivers, Dillard, who we had drafted out of Rice. I'm forgetting the other guy that ended up leaving Jacksonville and going to the Rams, Sims Walker.
Yeah.
So I was more in the role of helping these young guys develop and learn what it takes to be a pro. And I was okay with that, because I was doing some of that when I was in St. Louis, so it was no problem of doing that. But at the same time, you know, I still wanted to be productive when I can. I still ended that season, I think, catching a 63-yard bomb against Miami with nowhere near the burners that I used to have. But I was savvy. I was, you know, I could set up defenders. I was still quicker than fast. But my role there was the mentor, show young guys what it takes to be a pro. Maurice Jones, Drew was a part of that roster. So I enjoyed that part of it. It was kind of, you know, it was that give back to the game type of a feel, which I had no problem of doing. And I had a good group of guys that took to the mentor. We would do lunches. I made sure that we got together as lunches, receivers to do lunches. We caught balls after practice. We studied. We had dinners together. So things that you do as a veteran, when you're trying to create a winning culture or trying to establish professionals, I was able to kind of exercise that there in Jacksonville as well as in St. Louis. And then in New England, I was just trying to get back to one more championship, you know, to really put a, you know, to really, really put a nail in the coffin. But it didn't work out. But what I did find when I got to New England was It reminded me of being back in St. Louis in those formidable years, because it was really, I mean, it was such a focus and a concentration on winning and improving and competing. So I certainly enjoyed that part of the last stint there that I got in New England. And then seeing Tommy work, and Randy was there, and Gronkowski, and he was young. And the other tight end that came in from Florida, God rest his soul.
Aaron Hernandez.
Hernandez, who they could not cover. Neither one of those guys. I mean, it was incredible to see those two guys really dominate a practice. But I, you know, again, even though I didn't get a chance to finish on the field, there were still some experiences that I was able to get that really solidified and really closed the chapter for me in the National Football League.
Torrey Holt is a Pro Football Hall of Fame finalist. He's with us on the Midday 180.
Torrey, you're talking with your hands. I talk with my hands too. You are probably sick of talking about your hands, but I can't help but ask. And I saw them for myself when you were with the Jags. How does one move forward with their hands mangled like yours are? Is that chiefly Kurt Warner who did that to you? And why not get them fixed?
Well, it's from all the QBs that I've caught balls from. It's also the jug machines, the countless hours of catching off the jug machines and weakening these tendons that in my fingers. But you know what? Just, you know, an issue, Paul, that I had, even when I was coming out of NC State, I had issues with dislocations of my fingers. And so it was something that I was dealing with my entire career, even in college. And it just got worse as I got in the National Football League. But I've learned to deal with it. You know, when I was playing, you know, Reebok made an adjustment and switched my gloves to allow my knuckles and stuff to be able to fit in because of the swelling. And I hated wearing tape or anything on my fingers because I always felt like it contracted the way I liked to catch the football. I was a hands catcher. So I didn't like anything on my, I didn't like anything, restricting my ability to catch the football. So I learned to deal with it. And even now, you know, I have people ask me about it. It's actually when folks find out that it's me, it's, can I see your fingers? You know, can I see your hands? You know, they want to see my hands. But it's just a testament to the work that I put in. It's also a testament to guys like Jack Youngblood. You know, I think about these guys that played with broke legs and mangled fingers, you know, and dislocated rib. I mean, it's, you know, it was nothing for me to go out and play with a few dislocations in my hands. And then too, you know, seeing my mom battle with cancer, get up and go to work on a day, take chemo and radiation. So, you know, I built that mental fortitude up, toughness up in my mind, but then which allowed me when things would happen, you know, to be able to play through it. So, and my fingers were one of those things.
Torrey Holt with us on the Midday 180. A couple of defining moments, at least I would picture them as being defining moments throughout your life that shaped the football player you were. I won't necessarily go in chronological order here, but the 5-touchdown performance against Florida State in college, is that you were a great player, but is that the moment where you said, you know what, there's nobody that's going to be able to cover me at this level, and it's going to put me at a different level when I enter the league?
Yeah, I certainly came away from that game with a total different level of confidence. I had confidence going into that game, but, you know, Florida State played so much one-on-one, and the way Coach Kizer was moving me around within the offense and the way our O-line was protecting, we did have somewhat of a run game, and then Jamie Barnett, our quarterback at the time, was just on. It was just pitching in a respectful way. It was a pitch and catch contest.
Sure.
You know, who could get open. And I had the ability, again, I had the stamina to endure one-on-one matchups every single play. And then I had the ability to win and get open, and I had a quarterback that can get it to me. So I certainly felt, you know, you hear athletes talk about being in a zone. I was in a zone. And from that point on, I stayed in that zone throughout my junior year and on into my senior year, and then even into my professional ranks until I was done playing.
You worked a tobacco farm early in your life, right? I would imagine that is very humbling for any great athlete to know where you came from if you're working outside in that environment.
Absolutely. tobacco will make a man of you pretty quickly. I was 15, 16 years old when I was first introduced to the tobacco field, dodging snakes, dealing with the sap that's on you for at least a couple of hours to you dry it off, which is damn near by noon, lunchtime.
And then go back and do it again.
And then you go back and do it again. But what I also learned was I talked about mental fortitude and toughness. I learned mental toughness being in the tobacco field. When you have to walk 100-mile row and you're picking and plucking these leaves and you're scooping them, you got to walk to the trailer, put them on properly, mm-hmm. properly. You just can't just throw them on. They have to be placed properly. So you learn order. But my hands and forearms got so strong from pulling those tobacco stalks. And even when you talk about stripping the tobacco, which means you're stripping the entire leaf once you pull all off and it's in the barn. Now you go back through and you strip. Well, that takes a great deal of toughness. You heard Jerry Rice talk about some of the brick land that he did. Well, I had the tobacco stalks. That was something that helped build my strength in my hands and the confidence that I used when I played the game. It was nothing for me to pluck the ball out of the air because I was so used and comfortable to plucking those tobacco stalks and getting them to the trailer so they can get up in the barn. And working in the barn is a whole nother level,
right?
Of focus and alertness and awareness, because snakes up there, it's hot as heck. So my years in tobacco certainly shaped me to the person who I am. And I still carry a lot of those things that I learned then I still carry with me to this day.
And we're good friends on the show with Eddie George, and he spent his final year of high school ball at a military academy. You did the same, right? Mm-hmm. You went and played 1 year there prior to college. What did that do to form Torrey Holt as you went into college and in your pro career?
Hargrave Military Academy, and Eddie played at Fort Union. So yes. there was major beef between us. So we never lost to Fort Union.
We'll remind him for you.
Yeah, we never lost to Fort Union. No, it was a tremendous experience because I had some learning. I had some growing up still to do, too. Though I had some maturity about me, particularly when it came to sports, there was still some things socially that I needed some improvement in and some maturity on and some direction. And the military provided that for me. Now, initially, I didn't know that. I was thinking, well, I'll go there, play football, get my grades, and I'm out of here. I'm off to college. And I got there and had to make your bed up every day. You had to be in uniform. There was order. There was direction. It was exactly what I needed. And coming from my dad was served in the Marines and served in Vietnam. So he loved it. He couldn't get me there fast enough. But I couldn't understand at the time. I couldn't understand why. But when I went through it, and now being an older man, I can talk to my dad about what that experience was, and what it meant, and where he was coming from. But it made me a better person. It made me slow down and continue to think about what was important, but think about me as a person socially, how to grow and mature, take responsibility, and then carry that over to the playing field. It was a perfect marriage. Certainly something that I needed in my maturation as a young man.
Let's fast forward to the greatest show on turf.
three
of your teammates already gold jackets and bronze busts in Isaac Bruce, Kurt Warner, Orlando Pace. I'm curious, a lot of these teams today are not slinging it downfield like you guys did, but the open offenses of today certainly to some degree harken back to what you guys did. How much of today's game echoes what you guys were doing ahead of the curve?
Yeah, I think when you look at the vertical passing game and the depths of some of the routes, you certainly see that from our era and what Coach Marks instilled in that offense. We had 7-step drops. And what's on the back end of that route is a 25-yard route. So that's a long count pass for your offensive line. Think about the strain that puts on your offensive line. So our training mind was, I better get open. if he's going to allow me that amount of time, and if I'm as good as they think I am, as they say I am, it's my responsibility to get open. And we did that. So it was a good combination of having a solid offensive line and really good coaching by Coach Martz and his scheme. And then having the ability to draw up plays and take advantage of mismatches with the level of speed and talent that we had. Coach Martz was just incredible with that. Some of the option and the reverses that we were doing at the time when I was a Keen. Now you see with the zone read stuff. I mean, Coach was pretty innovative at that time, but he had the players that he can call that kind of stuff. But he also had the trust and the confidence to call those plays. You know, I think a lot of these play callers have these kind of designs that you're seeing now in their playbook, but a lot of them was afraid to call them. Coach Martz was never afraid to push the envelope and stretch the field. 53, I think Coach Bill Polian said 53 and a third, I think is what we covered. We covered every inch of the football field when you played against us. So we were not only receivers that can catch it, a hitch, and go 80, but we could play across the middle on zone situations. We understood zone concepts. Balls were thrown at a spot rather than to you. We understood that. So you had to be where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. You learned that pretty early under Coach Martz's system. So it was all those things, man. It was a really great timing offense that required a lot of attention, a lot of detail, a lot of focus, and a lot of trust. And we were able to do it at a level for a long time, for a while there, higher than anybody offensively there in the league's history. And I'm really proud to be a part of that. I'm really happy to be a part of that, be a pillar of that. And playing the X position, my position, guys, and Paul, you know this, and John, you guys study football. I played the X, which means I'm on the line of scrimmage all the time. Michael Irvin's played that position. I played that position. Galvin Johnson has played that position. Other guys that played the X position know exactly what I'm talking about. You have to be crafty, pretty physical, pretty strong, tough to play that position because you can get beat up off the line of scrimmage, running through traffic and all kinds of things. So I was X, Isaac was Z. So it was a good combination of what you need in your offense, and we married up really well with Coach Martz and his game and his mindset in terms of how he was going to attack you offensively.
So you're on the radio in Nashville. Obviously, you guys broke Titans fans' hearts. That game goes to overtime. You guys were pretty gassed.
Yes.
Do you think the Titans had the advantage? If Mike Jones hadn't made that tackle, you nervous about what happens from there?
No, because of that training camp prior to us making that run was one of the toughest training camps I've ever been involved in.
Macombs, Illinois. Very hot.
Macombs, Illinois. And for our listeners, Dick Vermeil was one of the toughest coaches in terms of getting his players ready in the National Football League. The year prior to that, they had beef with Coach Vermeil because he felt they worked him too hard. He worked his players too hard. So we was plenty ready, Paul, to go overtime, another overtime, another overtime, whatever it was we needed to go in order to win that game. But the preparation that Mike Jones, what year Mike was in, I was a rookie, but Mike would be one of the first guys in the building, one of the last at least. And sometimes he'd come in, he'd come in a suit, he'd have his bag, and it was just about business. And he knew and understood what offenses were trying to do to attack them, and it showed up in that play. But it goes back to Coach Vermeil too, preparing us for these moments. We would have 2-minute situations. They were live. They were physical. We had goal line situations that were live and physical. I mean, Coach took us through the ringer to get us prepared for moments like that. And Mike Jones stepped up and got it done for us in that game. And we were able to win. But if we would have had to go the distance to answer your question, Paul, we were more than ready to go the distance.
Torrey Holt, our guest. Torrey, we're not used to seeing in Nashville, big scoring offense. And the Titans had that this year. I'd love your thoughts on AJ Brown because we see him as a 1,000-yard receiver. Ocho Cinco came out and said this guy can be a 1,500-yard receiver. So I look up those numbers. You had over 1,600 yards in the 2000 season. How difficult is that to pull off, even in today's league?
Yeah.
And do you see A.J. Brown as someone that can join that very unique club? There's only a handful of you out there that have pulled that off.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. It's tough because it's so grueling. This is a tough league now. And A.J. Brown is very productive, so they find ways to get him to football. He gets his fair share of targets, and he makes his plays. So there's a level of beating, though. He's a big man. He's a big, grown man, but there's still a level of beating that you take when you're as productive as he can. So I certainly think he has the build, the mindset. I think he has a quarterback in Tannehill that can get it to him off of the play-action pass with Derrick Henry. There's going to be plenty of clear lanes for A.J. Brown, in my opinion, to be a 1,500-yard receiver. And he has the run after catch ability, and he'll match up and be physical with anybody. Doesn't back down from competition, and you have to have that. So, yeah, I think he can be a 1,500-yard type of receiver. I think he has the makeup, and, again, I think he has the fact that he and Tannehill, the chemistry and the trust that those two guys are building, is going to be something to deal with here going forward. But I'm a big fan of A.J. Brown. Corey Davis as well. It was good to see Corey Davis have this is the best season that he's had in his career.
Yes.
I was a little disappointed to see the way that he went out in the play. I would have liked to see him play in that because A.J. certainly could have used him. But it was good to see. They got to feel confident, feel good about Corey Davis going forward. The fact that he gave them a full season, it was pretty, and played fairly well.
Free agent now.
And Corey's a free agent too. Yeah.
So he'll be free agent. He'll be a hot commodity as he should. But I want to see Corey, as all receivers, I want to see them stay on the field. And you mentioned what would it take for A.J. Brown to get to 1,500? It'd take that, staying on the field. Which requires maintenance, some luck as well, and really good health. But it's going to require a high level of stamina. You heard me mention stamina earlier, guys. It's going to require a high level of stamina and detail and concentration, because now teams are going to come in trying to take away A.J. Brown. Now, can you beat the double coverage? Can you beat two-man? Can you beat quarters lock? Can you beat zone? Can you beat them pushing a linebacker out over you and maybe a guy stacked over you. So there's all kinds of things that he may be faced with going forward, and that's going to be the challenge with him. But if he can overcome some of those things, again, along with his ability and his size, he can be a 1,500-yard receiver.
What would it – I know it's going to mean a great magnitude to get the news that you are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That goes without saying. But to do it as the next member of the greatest show on turf, of the group that's in there – and to join that group and know that all of those years you were with that very humble unit, that you achieved not only personal goals, but team goals, and now post career goals of being the best of all time.
Yeah, man, it'd mean a lot, to be when you think of that Rams offense and the greatest show on turf, and as elite as we were, and now Hall of Famers. I think it's like I'm like the closing chapter of that, being inducted in, being one of the pillars of the greatest show on turf. I think it's humbling, man, because I had no idea that this is when I first got drafted. I had no idea. All I wanted to do was I wanted to get drafted. I wanted to go somewhere and play. I wanted to show that I was worthy of being sixth overall. That's another thing. I think that doesn't get told a lot is I was the number six overall draft pick in the 1999 draft. Number six, that expectations come with that. And I think I was able to see those expectations and more. So I think the Pro Football Hall, being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I think validates that. But for me, having an opportunity to do it with my teammates that we won a Super Bowl with, we'll always be connected because we did something special, which was to win it all. And those teams, and you guys know, and y'all speak to guys that played on championship teams, those are some really close, special teams. So this would kind of be the cherry on the top. And it'll give my teammates an opportunity to come back to Canton and enjoy the festivities because of I would not be here if it wasn't for them as well as my coaches. But I certainly enjoyed every bit of playing the game and what the game has done for me. And again, being inducted is certainly, I think it's the highest honor that you can get in regards to playing in the National Football League.
Hey, we really look, this is a great conversation. Really appreciate you taking the time to sit with us and to have it. I wish you the best of luck on Tuesday. I'm looking forward to hearing the case and being part of the conversation. And, you know, it's a crowded group every year.
Crowded group.
But it's also a discussion that goes on, as you know. So best of luck.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Paul. It's, again, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for bringing me on, allowing me to share my story and allow folks to get to know a little bit more about Torrey Holt.
What are you up to now, Torrey? What's the story with Torrey Holt today?
Man, so where should we start? So I've on Fridays, I work with ACC Radio.
Okay.
I'm a Sirius XM, so I do a show every Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, myself and Chris Patola. I am president of Hope Brothers Foundation that supports young kids with a parent or guardian that's battling cancer.
In honor of your mom.
In honor of my mom, yeah. We just celebrated our 20th year of service here in the community last year. I am vice president and partners with my brother Terrence at Hope Brothers Construction. And we are in commercial construction, and we work K through we do university work. We do we're currently on a project over at NC State. Right now we're currently on the UNC Rex Cancer Center project that we're doing. So we're in the commercial space with construction. And then I have three kids, man, well, my son's a sophomore at university, so he's studying to be a mechanical engineer over at NC State, my alma mater. And then my two girls just signed scholarships to attend NC State in the next couple of years to play soccer.
Wow.
I'm a Southeast coordinator for the Legends community, the NFL Legends community. And that's, you know, bridging the gap of all former players and getting us under one umbrella and making sure that we try to stay whole. So yeah, man. So that's kind of what I got going on, bro. So I got a full life, man.
I love it. Yeah. It's better than just sitting at home, right?
You know what I mean? And while I figure, you know, while I'm young and able to do the things that I enjoy doing, I might as well do it as much as I can till I can't.
Who's that picture dunking over your shoulder? Is that Jordan or is that you?
That's Jordan. Yeah, that's Michael Jordan. Yeah.
Or is that you? NC State guy with the NC picture.
Well, that, you know, I made it perfectly clear when I was going to NC State that I do have some Carolina in my blood. I do. I mean, how could I not have Lynn Bias, ACC, me, Jordan, Worthy. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Perfectly fair.
So it's perfectly fair. So I get a pass.
It's a great picture.
But Jordan's my guy, and then Muhammad Ali is who I love and admire as well. I mean, for obvious reason, Muhammad was a great competitor and fighter, but he was just he was strong in his beliefs and stood on it. And I appreciated the energy that he brought to everybody, Muhammad Ali. So the bob and weave stems from Muhammad Ali. Yeah. So my rookie year in training camp, I had Muhammad Ali boxing tapes, and I would go through them, and the way he was moving on the.
Oh, you legitimately studied him.
Yeah, I studied Muhammad Ali. I studied Muhammad Ali I was heavy on Muhammad Ali my first 2-3 years in the NFL when I was in St. Louis. And I would come home from practice and pop in Ali tapes, his interviews.
Did you ever meet him?
Excuse me?
Did you ever meet him?
I did not. You know, I did. I met him in Arizona at his event. But he was
right,
slow down.
Right.
But I did get a chance to meet Ali, say hello to him, you know, pay my respects, went through the museum and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I would watch his interviews. I mean, yeah, I was a big Muhammad Ali fan. I mean, studied him big time. Yes. So yeah, man. So those are my guys. Yeah. Ali and Jordan. Those are my guys.
Helping shape the mentality. Torrey Holt has been our guest. Great having you on. We certainly hope this isn't the last visit, but hopefully the next time. We'll be chatting with Pro Football Hall of Famer Torrey Holt.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. All the best, Paul. All the best, man. Take care. Good luck, man.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. Peace.
Take care.
Corey Holt has been our guest on the Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. Our thanks to Torrey Holt for the time. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
Good beat.
Man, the Hall of Fame class this year is stacked.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult. And those first-year guys, I think the consensus is that two of them are going to be without the... I mean, one of them is obvious, but Manning is a non...
You think Manning gets in like Favre got in?
Yeah.
Where he's presented like,
just
I present Peyton Manning, and then the presenter sits down?
I don't think there needs to be anything more than that.
And then, for the sake of time, there's no need to give a presentation.
The meeting actually starts later than it typically starts, but I think that's because there's no ticking clock at the end. We don't have to be done for a show because there's no show that night with these guys walking across stage. So I don't know that there's a ticking clock for us to be finished, which I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But Woodson, I think, is going to be very hard for him not to make it in his first year.
Yeah.
And then, I think some would say the same about Calvin Johnson, and some might say the same thing about Jared Allen, though I think a lot of people would have a lot of problems with four first ballot guys.
Back at it.
We had more.
We do. We will be previewing the divisional round and much more. That's it for the Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
Don't block the box. Do lock the locks. We love you.